Outside Health and Fitness Podcast, episode 119, how to have amazing adventures on the water.
There was not a lot I could do about it. The storm had parked over the top of me and was going nowhere. So for about 2.5 days, I sat in this storm, just like your own personal rain cloud sitting over the top of you. You know, all the sails were down. I had a tiny bit of sail up to keep the boat moving slightly. And I was in my survival suit. I had my rescue beacon in my pocket. And, you know, I was quite prepared that this could be somewhere towards the end.
Welcome to the Outside Health and Fitness Podcast. We're getting outside the box, outside our comfort zone, and outside and in shape. If you're bored with the same old fitness routine at the gym and you're ready to try something new, then this is the show for you. We're exploring new and fun ways to get fit on the trail, on the water, on the slopes, and outside.
Hi, this is Steve Stearns from OutsideHealthAndFitness.com. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of the Outside Health and Fitness Podcast. If you're new to the show, we like to stay fit and active by having fun outside. We like to ride, slide, run, walk, hike, bike, golf, rolf, swim, and ski. If it's fun outside and it keeps us healthy, we love it. So if you're like us and you want to be healthy, active, and have fun outside, then you found the right place. You know, we are natural-born explorers. We love adventure. If you think about it, when we're little babies, that's the first thing we do. The second that we can crawl, we're on the move. We want to see what's under there, what's on top of this, what's around that corner. We're having little adventures and we're exploring the new world. Unfortunately, for some of us, as we grow up, we run into obstacles and things that prevent us from having these little adventures. You know, we have responsibilities, we have work, we have families, we have things going on in our life, and we might even have limited resources. It doesn't mean that we've lost the desire. It's just a little bit more challenging to find adventures to have. Well, my guest today is a professional adventurer. Her name is Leah Ditton, and Leah never stopped exploring and having adventure, and she has her adventures out on the water. In fact, she's logged more than 100,000 nautical miles, and that is the equivalent of 4 times around the planet. So you know she has some amazing stories to share, and she's going to do that on today's show. You're going to hear stories from Leah about some of her adventures out on the high seas, and you're going to discover that there are many possibilities out there waiting for you, adventures that you can have where money and time don't have to hold you back. Now, after my interview with Leah, stay tuned because Jessica Bailey is back on the show to help you get more from your squat lifts in this week's Sassy Girl Exercise Tune-Up.
OutsideHealthAndFitness.com.
The last time on the show, I spoke with celebrity fitness instructor Kathy Kaler about staying hydrated, and she shared some really creative ways to work water into your day. It was a great episode, and if you missed that, you may also have missed some of the other exclusive content that I send out every week in the email newsletter. The newsletter is absolutely free. I send you a little brief about the upcoming show, some exclusive articles, tips, resources, that sort of thing, and I even include a free Tabata morning workout as a thank you for signing up. This is the workout that I do in the morning, and it's great. It revs you up for the entire day. It's really short, but you give it everything you have, and I know you're going to love it. So head over to outsidehealthandfitness.com/119. You can sign up for the newsletter right there, and I am going to wait right here. Don't worry. I'm just hanging out here thinking about all the adventures that I want to have. So as I mentioned earlier, my guest today is Leah Ditton. She is a writer, artist, athlete, and professional adventurer. Leah has sailed the equivalent of 4 laps around the globe, including 3 Atlantic crossings, single-handed. She's raced, set records, rode, and written about her adventures, and she has amazing stories to share. I was so honored to get a chance to talk with her about all of her accomplishments on the high seas and about her new book, 50 Water Adventures to Do Before You Die. So let's get right into my interview with Leah. Well, Leah, I am so excited to have you on the show, and thank you so much for jumping through all of the international hoops that we had to jump through to connect today.
Thank you for inviting me, and and working through the hoops with me.
Yes, but not as much adventure as you're usually used to. More of a technical adventure, I guess, right?
That's right. Actually, the reason that we were hoop jumping was that I'm in New Zealand at the moment and was down on the south coast in Bluff, which is the lowest point in New Zealand, to look at a boat that I'll be delivering up to the north of the North Island for a charity called Oceans Watch, which is on a mission to help the people of Vanuatu after the cyclone ran over their island recently.
Wow, that's a very exciting exciting thing that you're doing. So you're going to deliver this boat up there?
Yes, I don't normally do that kind of thing. I normally do it for private individuals who just want their boat moving from A to B. So to be involved with a charity feels pretty good, and yeah, particularly one that is going to help people that are very much in need at the moment. So,
that's great.
The boat's been loaned to the charity, and so it's not even the kind of boat that I would normally sail. It's called a Tiki 38 and is built out of wood by a Dutchman who built it himself. Hmm. And so the boat is a proper old school kind of sailing voyage type boat, you know, where there's no electrical this, that, and the other. It's paper charts and GPS held. So it's going to be really fun.
Yeah, as I say, it's old school for you.
Yeah, but also very slow.
Yeah, right. So how long will it take you to deliver the boat?
If we're lucky and we can go nonstop, about 10 days.
Yeah.
But I'm packing food for 20.
Just in case.
That's right.
That's awesome. You've done an amazing amount of things. I've done some research, but if you could give us kind of a snippet of some of your adventures and what brought you to the life that you're living now.
Sure. I often wonder how it happened myself. But basically, it started with a passion for sculpture and working with my hands, which led me to India in about 1999. And after about 6 months in India, most people are going to have at least one experience getting ill. And I was no different. So I went on to Thailand for a couple of weeks sitting on a beach, or so I told myself. In Thailand, I stumbled on a yacht race in Phuket on the west coast where they were looking for just helpers. And after the race, there were yachtsmen looking for crew to take their boats back to Australia, New Zealand, Cape Town, Europe. And I was 21 years old at this point, and I just thought, wow, what an adventure. Yeah. To sail home. And so I wrote to my parents, you know, dear parents, I am going to sail home. See you in about 6 months. And so off I went on one of the boats that went up the Red Sea back to Europe. And that was a change point for me in my life. I knew I would never go back to London and work in a studio in the cold making sculpture. It was a bit sad in that respect, but also it was opened my eyes to this world and the fact that boats are an amazing way to travel and explore.
You haven't abandoned your artistic pursuits either, though, right? You've kind of combined those two things.
Yeah, for a while I went racing. I was a professional yacht racer. And about 4 or 5 years into that, we'd gone through the Iraqi war and nobody flying down to the Caribbean to see the boats. Mm-hmm. So we'd gone through some road bumps there. I decided that it was time that I try and merge my two passions and made a sort of performance artwork out of using a boat. So basically I went back to art school and I said, I want to finish my degree by sailing across the Atlantic, you know, wait for the penny to drop. And I said, well, how are you going to make that art? And I said, well, my mission is to explore the nature of absolute solitude, what it is like to be completely and utterly alone. Mm. And so that's exactly what my head of department said. Hmm. And, and they said, okay, we're going to let you go, but we want you to write articles of reflection. And I said, well, what does that mean? And they said, we want you to write about your experience and don't write about the sailing. So I thought, right, so I'm going to write these articles, but I can't write about the sailing. And actually that was genius, because if you write about everything but the boat, that's what everyone else can understand. You know, everyone knows what it's like to be cold and wet and lonely, but perhaps in a beautiful environment. And so the following for that just grew and grew. And before I knew it, I was writing for sailing magazines, which I really enjoyed.
That's awesome. And so you literally crossed the Atlantic alone.
I did. I entered a race called the Austar, which goes from Plymouth, bottom foot of England, to Newport, Rhode Island in America.
Yeah.
And it took me 29 days.
Wow.
On a very, very small boat. It was about 35 feet. The cabin was the size of a sofa. You could not stand up. You could lie down. And to get into the bunk, you had to unpack the bunk and put the stuff on the floor. So it was extremely small and very wet. And I felt like I'd lived underwater for about most of that month.
Wow, that's incredible. And so what sort of training did you have to do to prepare yourself for that?
Well, mostly I had to rebuild the boat, because in order to be able to borrow a boat with very little money, I got a boat that had been flipped. So it had been turned upside down and damaged. And the owner was absolutely delighted that I wanted to take his boat and transform it. So that was my deal. I built a shed over the boat. I repainted it. I stripped it back. I repaired it. And so it was I had to earn my stripes in order to get the boat. So that was really my training. In terms of sailing on the water and fitness, there was none of that.
There was none of that.
No.
Wow. That's amazing. And I was even thinking that there may have been some mental preparation, but maybe you didn't really know what you were going to be facing.
I didn't, but I really wanted to do it. I had a very strong burning desire, and I had to go through, you know, rebuilding the boat and endless hurdles of people saying no and you are crazy. Everyone said you are no and you are crazy almost all of the time. And I didn't have money for electricity, for glue, to rent power equipment. And so I got quite compelling with my story about why this company needs to give me these items.
Yes.
And so there were about 40 sponsors involved by the end. It was a lot of legwork.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's just the desire to do it, which got me mentally across.
Yeah, that's right. Just had to keep your eye on the prize, right?
That's it.
You said it was a race. I think I read somewhere you were the only solo female to do that year. Is that right?
Yeah, I was the youngest competitor and the only woman in the end to finish.
Wow. And how many people started out versus how many finish?
There were some 40 or 50 boats that entered, and only 19 got to the other side. Wow. There was basically a big storm in the middle, and that divided the fleet. A lot of boats limped back after that storm with broken boats. A few people got injured, and then the rest of us continued on. So it was that storm which sort of made or broke your race. So then to finish my degree, I reenacted the experience on the boat in central London. Now, if I had thought that getting my boat to America was hard, getting it into Westminster in central London was another thing altogether. And that involved about 15 different government bodies having to say yes.
Wow.
And I obviously had my baptism on working around difficult people with my first project. But yeah, the worst of the lot was the only way to get it outside the Tate Britain Gallery was to use the slipway opposite, which was very unfortunately next to MI5. And they did not want to give me permission to go within their exclusion zone. They did not wish for me to use the slipway next to their building either.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's a great story of how I managed to get around that. Basically, it boils down to the estate manager fancying my friend Claire. It was always good to have a ginger friend called Claire who the estate manager fancies. But yeah, we ended up getting permission, and they even took off a couple of their cameras, which were in the way of the boat being rotated. So yeah, that was a huge epic in its own right, and felt like a massive achievement in life somehow to have put a boat in London.
Yeah.
As opposed to getting across an ocean.
Despite the dangers of the ocean, it's much harder dealing with the government.
Yes. Well, you're dealing with people who don't understand. And everybody that I spoke to wanted to meet me in person. And I concluded two things from that. Either there are not enough women in these government departments, or this is so crazy, you have to meet me and take a half of the day off to come and see for yourself. So yeah, it was just bonkers. But in order to get it there, I'd looked at lifting helicopters coming from Edinburgh at £7,000 an hour.
Wow.
We'd looked at lifting off the mud flats with different kinds of trucks. And in the end, the only loophole out of all the rules and regulations was that there are restrictions for width, there are restrictions for length, but there's no restriction for height. And so that's how we did it. We rotated the boat to about 85 degrees vertical and then trucked it in the wrong lane over the bridge in the middle of the night.
Wow, that's crazy. And then you just reenacted your 29-day journey right there.
I did. The boat was at an angle and I had special sails made that had holes in them so that the wind could go through.
Yeah.
And about 1,000 people came and chatted to me alone as they were walking past. A lot of people came and made a special visit, which was extremely good. And every day I would climb the mast once or twice. I gave a traffic report to Capital FM from the very top. I did all sorts of fun things like that. But yeah, a lot of people were just taken by the fact that there was a boat in central London. A nearby school brought a load of children and they had never seen a boat before.
Yeah.
And that was because it's inner city London, you know, if they're not a disadvantaged children, they wouldn't necessarily have seen the sea either. So yeah, you know, it was a really powerful experience all in all.
That's great. I want to go back to that big storm that you talked about. What was that like to be all alone in a little 35-foot boat in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean in a huge storm? That must have been scary.
It really was, because there was not a lot I could do about it. The storm had parked over the top of me and was going nowhere. So for about 2.5 days, I sat in this storm, just like your own personal rain cloud sitting over the top of you. You know, all the sails were down. I had a tiny bit of sail up to keep the boat moving slightly. And I was in my survival suit. I had my rescue beacon in my pocket. And, you know, I was quite prepared that this could be somewhere towards the end.
Yeah.
But I'd had another experience on another boat where we'd gone through a hurricane. So I knew it could get worse. So I was quite grateful that it wasn't that bad.
Sounds like you're the type of person that sees the glass half full, not half empty.
Well, on that occasion, I was seeing a lot of the glass whirling past.
That's right.
So most of these boats have a survival hatch, and it's like being in a fish tank. You know, you see the water churning past you. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Crazy. So now, at what time of year was it? You said you were in a survival suit. Was the water cold enough that you would have succumbed to hypothermia pretty quickly?
It was a survival sense in the sense it was completely sealed. It wasn't actually an immersion suit, which is the thick neoprene one for the cold South Pacific. But we use the word sort of bit interchangeably. But the time of year was May, so I arrived mid-June.
Mid-June, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Still pretty cold. I know I'm up here in Maine, and it for me personally, it has to be an incredibly hot day deep in the middle of summer before I'll ever go in the ocean. It's just too cold.
It's a bit sad. It's the same down in the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah, yeah. The way that I found out about you was you have a new book coming out.
I have. It's called 50 Water Adventures to Do Before You Die. And it's basically to inspire other people. I've done a number of crazy things. I've in total now been across the Atlantic 9 times, the Pacific 3 times, the Indian Ocean twice. And that's all very nice, but unless you have a lifetime and a strong desire to do that, it's not for everybody. And so I wanted to write a book that would say, all right, if you were going to do one water sport only once, where would the ultimate place be to do it? You know, what is the best experience you could possibly have? And then that gives you a starting point to go and seek it.
Right.
So for example, I love the idea of rowing in Venice and rowing your own gondola. But it took quite a lot of research to find that there is, in fact, one company that will allow you to do that. So you can go to Venice and have a 2-hour lesson on learning to row a gondola. And I thought, wow, that's magic. You know,
that is cool. Absolutely. That's very cool.
Kayaking. I chatted to people in the industry, a lot of kayak guides, and we agreed that kayak camping in British Columbia was probably one of the most beautiful, breathtaking places you could do it. And so, yeah, it went on like that. And then there were a couple like whitewater rafting, where there are so many options, you know, the Grand Canyon being iconic, that I wanted something that was not in every other guidebook. I wanted a different experience.
Yeah.
And I was talking to guides yet again, and we decided on the Foodlafu in Chile. And the reason was the rafting is very technical, very interesting. The yeah. scenery is alpine and very beautiful, but it's just the rafting. It's the ultimate place to go rafting, and it's in a beautiful place. But also, by going to Chile, you're helping to continue the life of the river, because that river is in danger of being dammed. So there are a few kind of environmental considerations that I took into account. You know, I could help people out by putting them in the book and by promoting these beautiful places that were perhaps even forgotten.
I took a quick glance through, and the one that really stood out to me was swimming from Alcatraz to San Francisco, because that sounded very dangerous. It sounded like quite an adventure.
It does have its dangers. There are sharks in that water. The water is very cold, and the current does a sort of bend where it pulls you out to sea before allowing you to come back again.
Ah.
In fact, I have done the training for that, and it was so popular, or it was pre-booked, that I couldn't actually do the challenge itself. But I had never swum in a 10 mil wetsuit before, and that was something else altogether.
Wow.
You know, the buoyancy of it and the amount of energy that you need to move in a wetsuit if you're going to swim. But it actually only takes about an hour and a half. You can even breaststroke it if you very must. But it's not as hard as you think, but it's the cold water and that current that make it very challenging.
Yeah, no question. And you had mentioned a second ago about, you know, doing something good for the environment and nature. And it occurred to me when you were out rowing, particularly solo rowing, you must have seen some amazing wildlife out on the sea.
I really have. I feel very privileged to have been out in the middle of nothing and shared space with some of the world's Goliaths of the sea. I jumped in a boat with a guy in 2010, and we did the Atlantic rowing race from the Canaries across to the Caribbean. And that was mad. I mean, as all my sailing friends thought, what are you doing? You know, how can you go two knots? How can you bear to be that slow? But it was an amazing experience because the route took us far south of any other traffic. Yeah. So there was not a day that went by that we didn't have birds hovering above us. There were fish nibbling on the boat, on the bottom of the boat, and anything that was growing on it. And so every week we had to jump in the water with a car window scraper and sort of knock off most of the barnacles so that we weren't creating a food chain underneath the boat. And there was, in fact, one boat that got attacked by a marlin, a blue marlin. Giant spike went right through the boat.
Wow.
Because they hadn't cleaned the bottom of their boat. And so small fish had come to eat the small barnacles, which become bigger fish to eat the small fish. And, you know, off it went. And before they knew it, they were being in this whole circle of blue marlin. You know? But yeah, I've had days where I've been on a sailing boat or in that rowing boat where I've just gasped because a whale has come up feet from where I'm standing, and that whale is bigger than the boat that I'm on.
Wow.
And that sort of thing just is magic. You know, I never get enough of that.
Yeah, it's got to be amazing. I've never experienced that, but I can just, well, I can't really imagine what that's like. That sounds amazing. Obviously, you are very passionate about life on the water and being out there on the water. What would people experience if someone wanted to grab your book and kind of thumb through there, look at some of those things, and maybe even plan a vacation around one of those adventures? What are some of the things that somebody that's a landlubber, is that the right term? Landlubber? Something like that.
Yeah.
what would we experience out there?
Well, the book's designed for every budget and every time span that you have available. So just last week, I'm down in Queenstown in New Zealand. And so I've done a couple of them. I did pack rafting, which is with this incredible boat that rolls up to the size and weight of a sleeping bag.
Wow.
So you inflate this boat, and they were designed in Alaska for crossing small bodies of water while hiking. You know, so they were a functional boat originally, and now they've been adopted by water sports fans like myself. Anyway, yeah, so we hiked into wilderness for 3 or 4 hours, and then we inflated these boats with this special bag. There's not even a pump for them. You inflate this bag, which is just amazing. Everyone needs a pack raft, I've decided. Anyway, so you inflate your pack raft and you pop your bag in it, you strap it to the front, you jump in with a paddle, and you can basically paddle back down the river.
Nice.
Off all the way to the beginning of where you started the hike. So I've gone off on a tangent. But anyway, yeah, so we did pack rafting and we did river boarding, where you're in the river with a bodyboard going down rapids. That's as crazy as it gets. That's as crazy as I like to get, I think. But, you know, that's only for an hour or so.
Yeah.
And this week we're going to heli hike the Fox Glacier, which is the third New Zealand one in my book, which is where you take a helicopter to the top of the glacier and then go for a hike at the very top, where it's pretty untouched and there are amazing ice sculptures.
So it sounds like there's something for everybody in the book. If you are looking for kind of a thrill situation, you can do that. If you're looking for just something to get out there, beautiful, like you said, kayak, camping, and BC, you've got a wide variety of things in the book.
Yeah, you know, you can even go swimming wild in France. By that just means, you know, swimming at a non-beach or a non-designated swimming area, you know, just jump in. And there's cruises in the book. There's the Antarctic cruise. And so when I came to do the Antarctic cruise, I thought, okay, not everybody loves boats like I do. So what is the shortest time you can do that trip in, you know, because time and money are big considerations. Sure. So I found a trip where you can arrive by boat on the subcontinent, which is like the original explorers did, but fly back.
Oh.
So that was where I was thinking, all right, so it's got to be in the book, but I need to make it realistic.
Right.
And then there's things like swimming with the jellyfish in Micro-Indonesia, which totally makes me squeal as an idea. But, you know, that's got to be there for somebody. Somebody's going to be up for that.
Right. That's great. It sounds like it's got something for everybody in there. And I think that's very smart. Like you said, it's, you know, a lot of us have these desires to be an adventurer, but then, you know, there's jobs and responsibilities and maybe you get a little time off, but you can't devote the total amount of time. So I think that's very smart to put in the book that way.
Yeah, I love the fact that you can have an adventure with no money. And even just walking along the beach and going around the corner, you know, scrambling over the rocks by the rock pools, that's a little adventure in its own right. You know, everything with a frame of mind of exploring is an adventure. And some of the best adventures cost nothing.
This is fantastic, Leo. If we want to get the book, how do we do that?
It's now on Amazon in the US.
Okay.
And it's also on the Book Depository, which is another company that ship free anywhere in the world in any currency.
Oh, cool. All right. That's great. I'll make sure to have links to those in the show notes. So if people want to come over there, they can just click on it and go right there and grab the book, check it out. That's awesome. And what if we want to follow you? I know you have a blog and Facebook and Twitter.
I do. I'm most active on my blog because I love writing. And so it's, leahditton.com or leahdittonblogswordpress.com. It's easier just to go to leahditton.com.
Yeah.
But every now and then I will do a run of signed books and I don't mind doing them custom signed. So I'll be in the States probably next month or a month after, and I'll be doing a book signing somewhere, probably on the West Coast. So
excellent.
If you check out my blog and sign up for updates, then I can keep you posted on that.
Perfect. That would be great. And I'll make sure to share that with everybody out there as well. That's great. Well, thank you. And anything else that you would like to share before we sign off?
If people start doing the adventures in my book, I would really love to hear about it. In fact, at the moment, I'm dreaming up a second book, which is called 50 Water Adventures Not to Do or Else You'll Die, which was sort of the running joke with me and my friends as I was writing it, you know, and includes everything from swimming with piranhas to getting in a barrel and dropping off Niagara Falls. So, I'm hoping to create a bit of community about with people who are out there doing stuff. And anyone who wants to join that community is most welcome.
That's great. I think that second book sounds fantastic. That would be two awesome books to have. Don't get those two books confused, though.
Yeah. Read the label.
Read the label. Yes. Well, Leah, thank you so much. It's been so awesome and such an honor to talk to you and have you on the show.
Thank you very much for having me, and I'll continue to enjoy your podcasts.
Thank you. Okay, it's time for the Sassy Girl Exercise Tune-Up with my good friend, fitness instructor, Jessica Bailey. Jessica is back to help you tune up some of your favorite exercises so you can get the maximum benefit from the time you put in. So, hey, Jessica, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm good, Steve.
That's awesome. So what are we talking about this week?
So this week I want to talk about the squat lift and what it does if you put too much pressure on the low back and not enough leg work. It's the most commonly observed mistake I can see at the gym.
Now, when you're talking about the squat lift, are you talking about somebody with a bar like free weights, or is it in the Smith machine, or where do you see this?
So most of the time I do see it in the Smith machine, but I have seen it when people put the dumbbells on their shoulders or they're using like a barbell with the weights on the end.
Yes.
And they put it on their upper back.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. So you have to keep your back in a correct position. And so keep your back straight and engage your core. Like I've talked about before, you have to engage the core. You cannot let your belly just hang out.
Yeah.
Because if the belly is hanging out, that means your back is totally unprotected. So make sure you're also engaging your buttocks and your core, and then lower yourself like I like to imagine that I'm sitting back on a chair. Mm-hmm. And so my knees will stay over my heels. So my toes are loose on the ground. So I'm not gripping with my toes into the floor.
Yeah.
So, you know, lift your toes a little bit, let them wiggle in your shoes and shift back into your heels. So you can extend your buttocks back and you can sit. Imagine sitting down.
You're talking about squatting in the Smith machine. I remember a few years ago, I was at the gym and I saw this guy go over and just put plate after plate after plate after plate on the bar. And this person was smaller than me, and I'm not a very big guy. And as he turns around, I go, oh my God, that's my doctor. And and he gets in there and I'm going, I can't imagine how he's going to be able to do this. And so he spins the bar to release the, you know, the little safety catches, drops down and stays there. And eventually he like squeezes himself out and the whole thing comes crashing down. And after that, I found a new doctor.
I think that's a smart call.
Yeah. I was like, man,
oh my God,
it was crazy.
I'm surprised. Did he get hurt?
I don't think he did. I think maybe his pride was hurt, but he was really lucky because there was nobody around to, you know, to save him. He just had to squeeze himself out of there.
Oh my God. That's awful.
Yeah.
See, that's what you should not do.
That's right. So I didn't mean to take away from you from your tip. It was just made me think of that story. So we want to keep our back straight, and we want to pretend like we're sitting down so that the weight is over our heels.
Yeah. So your heels should be on the floor the entire time, not your toes. You got to keep the heels back the entire movement, and then keep your shoulders above your hips at all times. So you want to keep your shoulders above your hips, and then you start to move.
Perfect. Perfect. That's an awesome one. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
As always, that was a great tip. You can get more awesome tips like that on Jessica's site at sassygirlfitnessnyc.com. Also, Jessica and I have a new show called Funky Fitness Now, where we take a fun look at the weird, wacky, and kooky things people do to get fit. Last week, we talked about workout tapes from the 1990s. Wow, did we do some weird stuff back then. So check it out at funkyfitnessnow.com. So today we learned that there are adventures out there waiting for you, no matter what your budget or how much time you have. Having a chance to experience new things, explore, and discover is really what makes life magical. I want to thank Leah for coming on the show and sharing her incredible adventures with you and I. Leah was nice enough to send me a copy of her book, and it is fantastic. Amazing pictures and really exciting and interesting adventures. There's something in here for everybody. If you're into outdoor adventure, you owe it to yourself to pick up a copy of 50 Water Adventures to Do Before You Die. I'll have links in the show notes for Lee's book and to everything else that we talked about on the show today at outsidehealthandfitness.com/119. Thanks again for listening to the show. And if you enjoyed the show, please leave us a review in whichever podcast player you like to use. Thanks again, and I'll see you outside.